It's me, Josiah. Let's get cozy and comfortable and get ready to hear some
enlightening,
empowering,
and inspiring talk on the virtual couch.
Leticia's virtual couch.
Hello, and welcome to Leticia's Virtual Couch. Today's episode, I will be discussing grief and walking you through the stages of grief. On Sunday, March 31st, sadly, we lost Nipsey Hussle. He was a rapper, but he was more than that. He was a community activist who loved his community in Los Angeles. And those such as myself, born and raised in Los Angeles, we are mourning his loss. He did it different, I will say. Yes, he was a part of the gang culture as he was growing up, as so many of our young men are in urban communities, because it's something that is very hard to separate yourself from. And me being a part of South Central Los Angeles, it is very hard for our young men to separate. However, he saw a vision and he carried it on. And so today I would like to dedicate my podcast to him because there's a much work to do. And so I will be discussing grief and loss and the stages of that. But I also want to talk about the problems that we are experiencing in urban communities all over America. So after this, I will be right back. So please stay tuned. Welcome back. Before the break, I informed you all that we lost a very dear soul on March 31st, 2019. Nipsey Hussle, born Amias Ashton, was killed in Los Angeles in what us LA natives know as the Hyde Park area or Crenshaw District in Los Angeles. This is also where his clothing store, The Marathon, is located and where he ultimately lost his life. Nipsey's senseless murder has left so many across the world distraught, from his family, hip-hop community artists, other celebrities, and just individuals nationwide, including politicians and even law enforcement. We all hear so often that the good die young, and when it happens so tragically, it leaves us all with many unanswered questions. Sadly, you know, many faceless and nameless families endure this type of grief from community violence throughout the country in urban communities. And I hate to say it, but it won't be the last. In the week Nipsey was killed, there were 26 shootings and 10 homicides in South Central Los Angeles. I just remember as a child growing up in South Central Los Angeles, I remember as the spring and summer months were approaching, we saw a spike in crime. And, you know, it always boggled me. And some of it is that, you know, a lot of our youth do not have anything to do. And I hate to say it, but, you know, the idle mind is the devil's playground, and that's what it means. So that's just another discussion. But a lot of times our youth are not connected to positive resources in the community. When I spoke also of gang culture earlier, I basically said that, you know, brown and black boys find it difficult separating from this type of lifestyle. And some of that can be alluded to institutional factors promoting poverty, racism, and the school to prison pipeline. Now, throughout this broadcast, I also want to include that I will be sprinkling some of Nipsey's lyrics and some of his songs throughout the interludes in this podcast, just to give you a taste of some of his music. Now, many people will regard his music as gangster rap, rightfully so, but if you listen without judgment, you will hear a story so many of our young black and brown boys, and I will say girls, live up close and personal on a daily basis in our urban communities. Now, one may argue that it may even perpetuate a life of crime, and you're entitled to your opinion, and you have many people that will say that. Now, according to the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, community violence is exposure to intentional acts of interpersonal violence committed in public areas by individuals who are not intimately related to the victim. And so that's what community violence is defined as, is when you have, basically in layman's terms, community kids that are living in close proximity to each other and they are exposed to a life of crime. Now, common types of community violence that you may be familiar with or may not includes bullying, fights among gangs and other groups, shootings in public areas such as schools and communities, basically civil wars, like civil wars in other countries. So it's basically a war zone-like conditions in U.S. urban communities, okay? Although people can anticipate some type of traumatic event, community violence can happen suddenly and without warning, as you see here. This is something that took everyone by surprise. It's something that was very publicized in the media. But sad to say, our urban kids live this on a daily basis. There's some things that they witnessed that never hit the media. Even to be honest with you, after that, I've heard that there were other killings in response to Nipsey Hussle's murder. And I'm not sure, but those individuals were connected to the alleged murder of Nipsey Hussle. So this is something that our urban youth endure on a daily basis. It just so happened that Nipsey murder was very publicized because of his celebrity status. Now, consequently, youth and families lived with community violence often have heightened fears that harm could come at any time. And that sort of, it can definitely lead one to have PTSD-like symptoms. When you're always living in constant fear and terror in your community. I just remember even myself growing up, always hearing the helicopters. And if you were growing up in back in my day, and even now, you would call it the ghetto bird was flying over. So something was always going on, in the community. Okay. And this can be very terrifying when you don't know from day to day and from minute to minute, second to second, if something is going to happen. Now, in addition, although some types of trauma are incidental, community violence is an intentional attempt to hurt one or more people and includes homicides, sexual assaults, robberies, and weapon attacks. And that can include bats, knives, and what have you. So just think of living in a community where from minute to minute, as I was saying, second to second, you don't know if you are going to be harmed, if someone close to you are going to be harmed. And as you know, bullets do not have a name and number on them. So you could be walking to the store, sitting on the bus stop, walking to school, and can be harmed. And these children every day are going to schools and they are basically in war zones. And a lot of people are not really talking about it. So I just, like I said, I want to dedicate this podcast not only to talking about Nipsey Hussle's murders, but I want to talk more deeper about grief and loss and what it looks like. Although it may be unpopular, but also the alleged murderer, what was probably going on in his head? Because as I stated before, PTSD-like symptoms can cause one to react emotionally without logic and to commit such murders. I would love to know some of the things that he saw as a young individual. You know, he's 29, but what are some of the things that he took in, or some of the things that he saw that would make him look at life as not worthy? Because when you can kill someone so senselessly, I always, as a clinician, want to look deeper into that to see how can someone take another life? How can one be so immune and numbed to taking someone else's life. And so that's something that should be explored as well. I know a lot of people are grieving and, you know, can probably care less about his feelings and what was going on. But as a clinician, I have to be non-biased, so I have to remain that way. And I also want to take you on a journey to look at all factors of this issue, because I think that's the only way we're going to come with real solutions, is we have to look at this from a proactive stance to provide some proactive solutions. So please stay tuned, and I will be right back after this break. The discussions on this podcast is for informational purposes only. If you find yourself becoming triggered by any topic, please refrain from listening and reach out to your nearest emergency room or dial 911. If you desire to seek therapy in the future, please Google and find your nearest therapist in close proximity to you. Thank you. If you or someone you love is having thoughts of suicide, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. It is available 24 hours, 7 days a week. You are not alone.
Have a seat on the virtual couch.
Get it, girl. Let's go.
Welcome back. Before the break, I talked a little bit about the alleged gunman, Eric Holder, who is responsible for the murder of Nipsey Hussle, allegedly. Now, he was taken into custody 2 days after the shooting at a mental health facility in Bellflower, California. Now, it has been stated that he has visited mental health facilities in the past for issues. Now, as a clinician, as I've stated before, you know, I have to remain unbiased and objective. And with that being said, I just want to pose a question. Was he a victim of his environmental circumstances from witnessing and participating in community violence as a child? You know, let's see. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Now, enduring community violence firsthand, it can definitely change a young person's life forever. And living with a chronic community violence around it, it can do enough to rob children of their sense of safety and put them in survival mode, making them ready to gear up and fight or flight. Now, if you know anything about fighting or flighting, that is our primitive response to danger. We either fight or we either flight. Now, if you study psychology, that's basically psychology 101. Exposure to community violence can affect a child's outlook on the future and their sense of control, leaving one anxious, on edge, paranoid, and even depressed. Many even indulge in drugs as an escape. Now, before the break, I did talk a little bit about that I would be sprinkling some of Nipsey's music throughout this broadcast. If you're listening on Anchor, you can hear it. Other platforms, you're probably not going to be able to hear it. But if you listen to this podcast on Anchor, you definitely can hear the music. And I did that for a purpose. I wanted you to hear some of the lyrics without judgment. And the reason being is because you may have heard a lot of artists who are in the gang culture, who have grew up in these communities, that their rap music is an outlet. And that's why I said to listen to it without judgment, because it is, you know, some people may look at it as glorifying gang violence, drugs, women, abuse of women, and so forth. However, it is known to be an outlet for them. So I implore you to listen without judgment again. Now, some ways in which youth have described the impact community violence in their lives are some of the following. hyperarousal. Now, basically, hyperarousal is a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, that's where someone, again, is on edge and they are in the fight or flight response. It may be someone who's very tense, very jumpy. So I wanted to kind of define that for you so you can know what it actually looks like. And again, like I said, it is a primitive survival mode response that one will exhibit that has witnessed or endured some type of trauma. Working with youth, I've heard all type of things of youth who've have some experience with community violence, you know, experiencing it or enduring it firsthand. I've heard youth inform me of feeling on edge, like something's gonna happen, looking over their shoulders. And this can be very traumatic in itself. Always having to look over your back, going to school, going to the stores, always living in fear. I've also heard of youth carrying knives, carrying weapons with them because they're always afraid that someone is going to harm them or their loved ones. And you may have heard as well, some youth, and this is very sad, that they're not expecting to live beyond a certain age. You know, I've heard so many males, and I've worked in youth authorities. So I've worked in juvenile settings, and a lot of the individuals I work with, which I was housed on a boy unit, so I was a clinician working primarily with young men, and a lot of them didn't even expect to make it to 30. Some of them didn't even expect to make it to 18 because they, in the juvenile setting, they were under 18. Another thing, fear of losing their loved ones. I said that before, you know, always constant fear of not only losing their own life, but their loved ones. Because as you know, when you are part of the gang culture and you get into some trouble, you know, some of these individuals do not care about harming your loved ones. So even with that, being more apt to getting drunk and getting high to numb and shield themselves from the pain of losing someone, or just numbing themselves from always feeling on edge, fearful, and filled with anxiety, and being jumpy and nervous from the smallest things, even from sounds. Like I said before, you know, growing up in what we would call the hood in urban communities, always hearing the helicopters, you know, that could be a trigger for someone because you know that when you hear that, something has happened. So it's almost like living in a real life war zone where military personnel are experiencing that, but a lot of our youth are experiencing the same things right in our communities. Just having the ruminating thoughts of violence every day can not only have a damaging effect on someone's emotions, but also their physical well-being as well. As you know, or you may not know, but if you are always at an arousal state, always anxious, always fearful, that you can excrete what we call cortisol. And that over time can damage one's heart and other issues. So I definitely wanted to give you a little bit more information on that. Later on in the podcast, I'm going to speak a little bit more about post-traumatic stress syndrome. Well, post-traumatic stress disorder. Some people just say post-traumatic stress syndrome, but it's really PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, I wanted to go a little bit briefly over the stages of grief. And I'm going to, I guess, go in a little bit on that when I come back after this break, because I want to spend a little time with that as well, so you can see exactly what it looks like if you see someone that you may be working with, someone in your family, or even yourself. I'm going to go over what the stages are and what some of the signs may look like. So stay with me, and I will be right back after this break. Welcome back. Now let's talk a little bit about grief and loss. Now before I begin, I would like to include The grief and loss stages are not linear, but they're quite fluid. An individual may pass back and forth between each stage several times throughout the process. The first stage is denial. It's one where the individual may be in shock and disbelief as a result of the loss. The second stage is anger. You know, one may feel anger at the individual that they felt left them. It's quite common for someone to get angry about being left a widow, their mother dying and leaving them. So it's a very normal phase. And sometimes the individual may even feel guilty afterwards for feeling that way. But it is a normal stage in the second phase of the grief process. Bargaining is number three. That's the third phase. Pleading with God to keep their loved one alive is an example of that. So usually this occurs prior to losing the loved one. So someone may have a loved one on life support or even have a disability as a result of an event. And the other individual may bargain with God to cure their loved one and to keep them alive. Or like I said before, if the individual is disabled, to cure them from their disability. The next phase is depression. That is quite self-explanatory. In this phase, you will see marked sadness, tearfulness, someone with low energy and motivation to do things with other people. They may also isolate, have bouts of despair, issues with eating, sleeping, and sometimes thoughts of suicide. Now, the symptoms can vary in severity and length. And the last phase is acceptance. Now, this is the phase where one will say they are back to normal or a state of normalcy. However, events such as birthdays, anniversaries can trigger an individual to travel through the phases again. However, once one has achieved acceptance, if there is no other traumatic event, that is usually short-lived, okay? I would like to note that the grief process is much easier for individuals who have adequate support. I cannot stress that enough, that community emotional support is so important. And one's ego strengths. And the reason why I brought ego strengths, because if you see, some individuals have gone through what we call hell and back, and they bounce back pretty well, right? Now, each individual has their own ego strength capacity, or we can also say resiliency. And that varies from person to person as well. And over time, from childhood, someone's ego strength is built from childhood, and various factors are involved in that. Now, let's talk about PTSD, post-traumatic syndrome, and we can say post-traumatic stress disorder, but I've heard both ways being described. Now, these heart-wrenching losses have prompted public discussion, and some have even connected it with suicide. So let's talk about that. What is PTSD, first of all? The Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and I've always referred back to that. Again, this is the manual that clinicians such as myself use to diagnose individuals. Now, according to the DSM-5, that's the short name for it, it defines trauma as exposure to actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence that is experienced directly, witnessed, or happened to someone else. By hearing a close family member or friend experiencing it, repeated or extreme exposure to trauma details through one's work, such as first responders. Now, individuals such as paramedics, they may definitely deal with PTSD. Can you imagine some of the things that they witness on a daily basis, as well as police officers? Now, the symptoms include re-experiencing the trauma. Now, this can happen through nightmares and flashbacks, avoidance of reminders of the trauma, changes in beliefs and feelings, meaning distancing themselves from loved ones due to mistrust, negative mood changes, etc., and hyperarousal. So those are some of the symptoms of PTSD. And PTSD is very tricky because all of those factors have to actually be included in order for a person to be diagnostic with PTSD. The person also must experience the symptoms at least 4 weeks and must have substantial distress that interferes with their daily functioning, okay? So an individual that is just normally dealing with a stressful event and they have some symptoms, like one or two, they may not be diagnosed with PTSD because, like I said before, all of the factors have to be there. And so, again, a person has to directly or indirectly experience some type of trauma, okay? Most people who experience trauma will not develop PTSD, like I said before, but they do have a higher likelihood of experiencing them, okay? And individuals who usually have some type of PTSD symptoms and dealt with some type of trauma, they have a higher probability of using substances, you know, drugs, have anxiety and depression. And like I said before, there have been links to PTSD and suicide. So just go back to the individual. Like I said, as a clinician, I always have to remain unbiased. Well, of course, I'm human, but I have to always go back and remain unbiased. As I research and surf the internet, I hear I see few conversations, if any at all, that is actually talking about the perpetrator of the Nipsey Hussle murder. And rightfully so, I understand, you know, everyone is very emotional right now because it was very tragic to have lost someone of his stature and someone with so much compassion and so much promise. But I always have to look back and see what the individual who is alleged in murdering him, what was his life like? Because something has to have happened for him to have committed such a heinous act. I want to provide you with a few stats regarding PTSD as well. In a nationally representative U.S. sample, 32% of people with lifetime PTSD diagnosis reported experiencing suicidal thoughts compared to 6 through 14% of the general population. Now, as I said before, this individual has had some mental health issues in the past. It was reported in the media, but it didn't go into detail what those things were, but I'm just very curious to know what are some of the issues and what are some things that probably prompted him to commit this heinous act, and what are some of the things that contributed to his mental health issues. And I'm not saying he was suicidal, but sometimes suicidal ideation and homicidal ideations and acts usually go hand in hand. But let's take another break. I want to dig a little bit deeper in this because I think it warrants a discussion, because I'm always looking for ways to help solve issues in our community and abroad, because this is happening just more frequently. And it just seems like every time something like this happened, whether it's mass shootings or something on a more personal level, and close to home, because when I say close to home, it has affected so many people in the industry, as well as citizens of Los Angeles and in other urban communities, because we see this all the time. But we need to continue to have discussions with law officials and politicians to see how we can remedy this very prevalent problem. And we always go back to mental health. We have a discussion maybe for a couple of days, and then another event happens. So after this break, I want to dig a little bit deeper in some things that we can do. And PTSD and suicide, I wanted to have some more discussion about that as well, just to educate, enlighten, and empower. As I always say, that's the reason why I created this platform. So stay tuned.
this is your girl Letitia coming to you from the virtual couch. I want to take a little bit of your time today to discuss how to find the right therapist. Now, like with anything, your hairstylist, your gardener, your medical doctor, it may take a few tries before you find the right fit. Finding the right therapist is no different. So stay the course and don't give up. Also, I want to empower you to ask questions. Do not feel like you're being intrusive by asking questions, because guess what? This is the person that's going to lead you and guide you towards your healing. And this is a very important partnership. So I will say this even as a therapist myself, if a therapist becomes offended by any questions that you may have, just like with any other individual that I discussed before, like your doctor, your gardener, whoever, someone, you know, working on your home, if they become offended, you're probably not going to hire them, right? Exactly. Your therapist is no different. So don't feel offended. Don't be offended by the degrees and the licenses and, yes, all those hard things we worked for, but we're here for you. And so it is your right to ask every question you need to ask to make sure it is the right fit for you. And again, it may take a few tries. And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that therapist is a bad person either. It just means that, you know what, they may not be the right person to guide you on your journey. So I want to leave you with a few resources. Psychologytoday.com is a resource where you can view various therapists, and you can even input your area by your zip code, your city, and your state to find the therapist nearest you. You can also go to therapyforblackgirls.com and therapyforblackmen.org. Please seek these resources out. They are awesome. There are some wonderful, very experienced therapists on these sites, some of which are my beautiful colleagues, and I know the hard work that they do, and they are waiting to hear from you. Okay, so I'm not gonna take any more of your time, because I know you can't wait to get to that computer, right? And search out that therapist. So I'm not going to say anything further. If you want to tell me about your experience, I would love to hear about it. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And happy hunting. Take care.
Is your enjoyment a break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch. And get ready to hear our girl Letitia drop some more gems on ya.
I wanted to correct a previous statement that I made prior to the break. Suicide ideation and homicide ideation doesn't usually go hand in hand. It can go hand in hand. So I wanted to make that brief distinction between can and usually. So let me explain. Suicide ideation and homicide ideation can occur simultaneously by death by cop. And so when an individual is suicidal, they can engage police officers in violence to incite gunfire. So an individual who is suicidal, instead of having the courage to commit the offense on themselves, they may engage police officers, because if they pull out a gun on a police officer, 9 times out of 10, or you may want to say even 10 times out of 10, probably, they're going to be shot and killed, because that's what police officers are trained to do, right? Because they have to protect themselves and protect the greater good of others. So sometimes, and there's been cases when an individual is suicidal, they will pull out a gun and do things that will cause the police officers to kill them. Now, an individual can also do this
if they go into rival neighborhoods, such as gang violence. So say, for instance, the individual, and we don't know what his state of mind was, but what if he was suicidal who allegedly killed Nipsey Hussle? So what if he was in that suicidal state and he went in to cause some kind of rift, some kind of argument, and not knowing that anybody was going to kill him or not? Who knows? We don't know. You know, still very early in, you know, in the investigation, we haven't really heard any much about it. But I just wanted to kind of create a dialogue and to educate you on how it can be presented and how it can manifest. Now, there is a link, like I said before the break, between PTSD and suicide. I just wanted to clear up a few things before I went on. And one of those factors is survivor's guilt. Now, this is when an individual feels bad or wrong for living through a traumatic experience where someone else lost their lives. Now, in this instance, for an example, the bodyguard of Nipsey Hussle, there was an interview where he stated that he was retiring, or an article that I read, that he's now retiring from being a bodyguard because he felt guilty that he wasn't able to be there to protect him. Now, it is known that Nipsey did not call him, and he wasn't aware that Nipsey was going to go to the store to meet some of his friends, but he still felt guilty nonetheless. So this happens a lot when there's a loss and one party survived and the other ones, you know, didn't. It can lead to depression and suicide. Hopefully that won't be the case in this instance and he get the help and support that he actually needs. Number two, emotion regulation difficulties. And this is when people struggle to find healthy ways, effective coping mechanisms to help combat depression that can lead to suicide. So again, even from the example that I just provided to you, hopefully the individuals that are affected, you know, family members, friends, or what have you, can be provided with the necessary support. And third, cognitive inflexibility. There's a linkage with suicide as well. And this is when people have a hard time seeing their problems from other perspectives. They may have difficulty thinking of alternative ways to suicide. So as a clinician, I've had individuals who couldn't find any way out and they just wanted the pain to stop. And I've actually have had individuals say that. And so my role as a clinician was to help them find other ways to combat their depression and not feel the numbness, not feel the emotional pain and despair that they were experiencing. What reduces suicide risk amongst people with PTSD are some of the following things. Community support. In this case, I would suggest as a clinician that the citizens of LA, especially LA, because I think LA was really hit hard because it's like we lost a community leader. And LA is really weeping right now and really grieving right now. And so I would definitely suggest that the LA community would come together and provide community resources for the individuals, those directly connected and those indirectly connected and affected. And we see this a lot of times in mass shootings where crisis organizers, grief counselors come together to provide help. And this type of local organizing is very crucial that can connect trauma survivors and those who have vicarious trauma. And I'll go into a little detail about that later. And I may even do that with for my after show to talk about vicarious trauma because there's a lot of mental health counselors and first responders who are also affected by this as well and can be affected with vicarious trauma. Number two, research supported treatments are some things that can help as well. And the National Center for PTSD is a great resource to access. and they have a lot of information and suggestions for coping with trauma following violence, usually mass violence, but I would say to contact them in general, because they have a lot of very good resources. And third, safety and crisis planning. You know, those are some things that help with people with PTSD, suffering with PTSD. Check in with trauma survivors to see if they're having suicidal thoughts. You know, listen to individuals in a non-judgmental, compassionate manner. And yeah, things of that sort. So I want to come back and with my conclusion. And talk about some ways that we can move forward from this recent tragedy, and also to come with some proactive remedies and some methods to stop these type of things from happening in the future. So stay tuned after this break for my conclusion. Experiencing trauma can be very devastating, and grief can be extremely debilitating when unaddressed and allowed to persist and fester. Circumstances surrounding Nipsey Hussle's murder have been covered nonstop since his murder on Sunday, March 31st, 2019. And it's extremely important to protect ourselves from being triggered and overwhelmed with emotions that can cause us to spiral. The following are a list of tools that you can use and incorporate in your daily lifestyle to prevent from being overwhelmed. Remember to openly talk about your feelings with trusted individuals with whom provides support and comfort, as well as a safe space to share your inner feelings. Also, consider consulting a therapist who can use an array of evidence-based practice treatments who will help you explore your thoughts and feelings and help you to manage your symptoms. Also, limit your time reviewing social media posts, YouTube videos surrounding traumatic events, as well as minimize time watching the news that may repeat coverage of events all day. Remember, if you find yourself becoming increasingly fatigued, overwhelmed, depressed, or even suicidal, please discontinue watching all coverage of the event and refrain from discussing the event with others. Also, spend time engaging in pleasurable activities outside of the home alone or with others. I myself had to decrease watching coverage of the Nipsey Hussle incident because I was becoming overwhelmed with it, because it's very tragic, and any type of content that is filled with so much tragedy, it can definitely induce some feelings of overwhelm in you. And I definitely want to let you know too, if you have any thoughts of suicide, any suicide ideation of harming yourself, please call 911 or go to the nearest emergency room, or call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. I wanted to close this podcast episode by stating that I believe Nipsey Hussle's murder affected so many across the world because we all wanted to see that rose that grew from the concrete blossom, as opposed to being plucked prematurely. We all wanted to witness Nipsey's plight reach and realize, and sadly, we couldn't. When the young die, we see potential lost, and we feel sort of shortchanged and cheated from that promise, from seeing that promise actually flourishing. I'm an avid believer that all things work together for good, but it's difficult to see, of course, when something of this nature has happened. It's very tragic. But if we are able to look at it through optimistic lenses, we can see that there is a promise for tomorrow. But again, it is very hard to look through healed and optimistic lenses when we are stuck and entangled in the web of grief prior to the acceptance phase in the grief and loss process. You know, grief is a natural part of life that we all must go through, and there is no perfect timeline. I want to let you know, there is no perfect timeline of when one will arrive to acceptance of that loss. So with that said, you know, take time to live your life, love on your loved ones, because tomorrow is not promised to any one of us. Before I close, please do not forget to download the Anchor app on your smartphone to hear some of Nipsey's music that I've sprinkled all throughout this podcast episode. Also, do not forget to email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you, and God bless.